Let's turn to the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 4, and we'll be starting tonight in verse 20. You know, we've talked on and off over these last months as we've gone through both Romans and Revelation and the book of Proverbs about how people are being seduced in the harlot culture that we live in, how this is happening to Christians as much as non-Christians, seduced. Our guard is down as never before. So many Christians have laid down their arms and they're drifting away. Sometimes it seems like in droves, and some don't even know that it's happening to them. And at times like these, more as much as ever before, we need to be on the alert and on our guard. When we go to school or to work or even out to play, even at home these days, lest you end up drifting away, slip-sliding away, maybe without even knowing it. Casual Christians is what many are becoming, and casual Christians become Christian casualties. So how do you keep that from happening? We're going to see tonight it's by maintaining our purity as opposed to conformity. And we're going to see that purity alone will protect us from the seductions that are out there in the culture and even in here in the church. As one man said, he is armed without who is innocent within. Someone else said, what lies behind us and what lies before us and what lies around us, all the seductions are small matters compared to what lies within us. Because often it's what lies within us that makes us vulnerable to all the rest. We've been looking at some first principles from a second father here in Proverbs 1 tonight. And of course there are 10 such principles, the 10 commandments of wisdom. And for the second time we come to principle number 5. And that is, wisdom is costly. It takes work, but it is worth it. Last week, in verses 1 to 9 of chapter 4, we saw the price of wisdom. And then in chapters 10 to 19, we saw the payback of wisdom, all to prepare us for verses 20 to 27, our verses for tonight, where we will learn about the practice of wisdom that keeps us in the narrow way. No less than the wisest man who ever lived next to Christ becomes our master teacher. And what he's saying is almost like what Cat Stevens used to sing, and this dates me, as we saw at the beginning of this section, now more than ever, oh baby, baby, it's a hard world out there. It'll take you down if you're not careful. And so if you gotta go out into the night, if you gotta go, we got it to be in the world, but not of the world. If you're gonna do that, take good care. So how do you take good care? Well, that's Proverbs 4, starting in verse 20. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their body. And then he gets into the details. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil. Watch your heart, he says. Under it all, you got to watch your heart. And then it all has to do with your mouth, your eyes, and your feet. Very basic, very simple. But let's take it from the top again, starting in verse 20. My son, give attention to your ears. Incline your heart to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to their whole body. Here he says something, which is the fourth time he said it in these two chapters. Solomon tells us that the way of wisdom is the way of life. He reminds us of this again because the practice of wisdom carries such a price, as we saw last time. So he keeps highlighting the payback. It's going to be worth it. It's life. The disciplines that he's about to outline here about watching our heart, our mouth, our eyes, and our feet are quite a challenge. And so once again, to tee them up, he says it's going to be worth it. the way of life. And they're extremely important, especially these days. And so he takes on a note of extreme urgency. If ever there was a time to be extremely urgent, it's now. Again, verse 20 says, "Give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart." Why? Because, oh, baby, when you get out there, it's a hard world. And what in particular does he want us to give attention to? Which words does he want to keep in the midst of our hearts? Well, first, and now we get into these four things. Watch over your heart. Again, verse 23. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. He's talking about the inside of the cup. That is, who you are on the inside determines what you'll become on the outside. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for your life flows from it. From it flow the springs of life. All of who you are springs from the heart. As a man thinks in his heart, Proverbs 23:7, what a man thinks in his heart, what? So is he. Yeah, same idea. It's like Christ said in Matthew 15, out of the heart come evil thoughts. And what happens then? What do those thoughts become? Out of the heart come evil thoughts. Next word, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, slanders. No, notice how he slips from what we're thinking in the heart to what we're doing in our life without a word in between, without taking a breath, without skipping a beat. Because it's like cause and effect. Heart, evil thoughts. Next word, murders, adulteries, fornications, etc. It all starts in here. Just like Solomon says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, for from the heart flows the springs of life. The unfortunate thing is often we let our hearts and what we're thinking in our hearts get away with murder, and then we wonder why we lose it. Why is all this coming out of me? Why did I get so angry? Why did I stop at that internet site? Why was I such a pushover? Why have so many Christians dropped their guard? Answer, well, garbage in, garbage out. What were you filling your heart and mind with in the hours and days before that temptation came knocking at your door? All too often, the resolve to stay pure comes long after it's too late. Long after we've filled our hearts with murderous thoughts and adulterous thoughts and fornications and thefts and false witnesses and slanders and all the rest, as Christ warns us against, rather than whatever is pure in there, like Solomon, like Paul says, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is noble, whatever is of good repute, if there is any excellence and anything worthy of praise, let your minds dwell on these things. Because that's where it all starts. The first discipline by which we make sure we don't drop our guard and don't go slip sliding away is to watch our hearts by watching our thinking, by minding our minds, otherwise known as master control. Master control. It's like C.S. Lewis said. He's talking to his body. "You are always dragging me down," said I to my body. "Dragging you down," replied my body. "Well, I like that. Who taught me to like tobacco and alcohol? You, of course, with your idiotic adolescent idea thought of being grown up." Where did that start? As a man thinketh in his heart. "My palate loathed both at first, but you would have your way. Who put an end to all those angry, revengeful thoughts last night? Me, of course, by insisting you go to sleep. Who does his best to keep you from talking too much and eating too much by giving you dry throats and headaches and indigestion, huh? And what about sex?" said I. "Yes, what about it?" retorted my body. "If you and your wretched imaginations would leave me alone, I'd give you no trouble." That's the soul all over again. You give me orders and then blame me for carrying them out. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. For from it flow the springs of life. So what's polluting the springs of your heart? Adolescent thoughts of wanting to be grown up? Well, maybe not now, maybe before, a few years back. Angry, revengeful thoughts? wretched imagination? Is your guard down? Well, to a good degree, that depends on what's in your heart. The first step to keep from sliding away like so many others is to watch your heart. But then secondly, it's your mouth. Verse 24, next verse. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. Put devious lips far from you. Now, let's think about it a bit. Why would Solomon go from thoughts to words, devious words? And in particular, from warning against impurity in the heart to warning us about dishonesty on the lips. Well, the scripture makes it clear it's because one leads to the other. That is, we cover our impurity with our dishonesty. We cover our sin with our deceit. Once it's lodged in the heart. And we do it almost instinctively. It's like it says in Isaiah 28:15, we have made falsehood our refuge, and we have concealed ourselves with our deception. And so if you're truly concerned about the condition of your heart, the first thing you'll do is not cover your sins, but to confess it, lest it festers and grows in the dark. If you really care about your vulnerability in a darkening country where so many have dropped their guard and are slip-sliding away, you'll do something about your depravity, and in particular about the deceit by which you cover your depravity. And that's something I've really appreciated here. There are so many who are willing, honestly and humbly, to talk about it and to admit their struggles. If you're truly concerned about heart issues and life issues and what happens in that hard world out there, you'll put away from you a deceitful mouth, put devious lips far from you. You'll own up to what you've done, hard and humbling though it may be to do that, knowing that His forgiveness is freely given, and what you're putting to death, like we talked about this morning, is not the real you anymore. It's only a cockroach, you know, to be crushed once you brush it off your wedding dress. But it's a loathsome thing, still, though you're not a cockroach anymore. Right? But we're afraid of the painful consequences of telling the truth, however healthful it may be. The reason for lying, Joseph Buckley was president of the American Polygraph Association. He said, the reason for lying is always the same. He's discovered over 40 years of doing this. To avoid the consequences of telling the truth. You know, a youth pastor I worked with once told about the time that he and his wife were in his kitchen, and he had an old phonograph record player. You probably all remember those days. And it was playing in the living room, and all of a sudden they heard the needle scrape across the record. And, of course, it sounded horrible, and so they ran into the living room, and when they got there, their little six-year-old Luke was standing sheepishly, you know, right by the record player, and he was pointing at his little sister, who was 6 months old, you know, going goo-goo and gaga on the floor across the room, and he said, she did it. It's like someone said, a lie is an abomination to the Lord and a very present help in time of trouble. We learn that at an early age. Of course, we adults do it in more sophisticated ways, ways that are almost instinctive. And so we need to watch out for that. Put away from you a deceitful mouth. We cover our sin with deceit in so many ways. When your wife says, for instance, why were you angry? Have you ever said, you know, what are you talking about? I'm not angry, I'm just frustrated. I think all of us men do that. We don't realize the degree to which what's built up in it. I mean, you feel like saying, if you only knew how much I held back, you should be grateful. Right? But still, there's that flash in the eyes that's like a dagger into the heart of our wives. And we cover it up. It's murderous. I've done that. Frustrated. Ever said that? Rather than saying, okay, I know I'm angry. And there's that some flesh in that anger. And it's like a sword in your heart, and I'm really sorry. I've got to work on this. And I think there are some things we need to work on too, because when you do that, you may not mean to, but it makes me feel like this, and then you get into a dialogue where you can work things through so it doesn't just build up and happen over and over again. And then you start to deal with your stuff rather than to bury the stuff through deceit so that it only festers in the heart. One of the most powerful examples of this I've ever heard is a true story from a book called The Myth of the Greener Grass. It's about adultery, the greener grass. And I wish there were time to read it all, but to make a long story short, it's about a man who took his family through hell on earth with an extramarital affair. And after years of denial and deception and falsehood that only made it worse, God broke the man, finally, and he stopped covering it up, and he came clean with many tears, and God healed the marriage. And here is what he said he learned from all of that hell on earth. He said, this is the guy who wrote The Myth of the Greener Grass. Across the room, I looked at Doug, hardly a picture now of the man he had described to me of who he was. He had a pleasant face with a ready smile, animated features, a quick mind. What was the bottom line of what happened, I asked. His answer was crisp and clean. I was moved toward truth. That's what got us out of this. Truth with my wife and truth with God. I determined that I would spend the rest of my life being honest. I know what being deceitful cost us. Sally and I have deliberately worked at this concept of truth. The thing that will destroy the marriage is the lie. Adultery alone does not necessarily destroy the marriage. It is the lie. We were able to handle it when it was brought into the light. Every man has his flaws and sins. It is only when you keep it in the darkness that sin grows and multiplies. Only if it is brought to the light is there help for you. Now, if I'm tempted to sin, I want to get it exposed immediately. And that means I must include my wife and some other men who are in my small group. It's like the Nigerian proverb, he who conceals his disease cannot expect to be cured. Duh. Or James, confess your sins to one another and pray for each other so that you may be what? Healed. Or Solomon, put away from you, our passage for tonight, a deceitful mouth. Put devious lips far from you. There's too much at stake here. He's armed without, who's innocent within. Without this, we're sitting ducks in a darkening world. Unless, under it all, one, you watch your heart, as two, you keep the dark out of your heart by exposing it to the light, putting away from you a deceitful mouth. And then three, verse 25, let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Why? Well, as quickly as your confession can clean out your heart, your vision can fill it up again with bad stuff. Right? The eye gate is the floodgate. And so we go from, unfortunately, we go from preaching to meddling here, because these days there's so much for the eye gate out there, especially on the internet. Just like Christ said, for if your eye is clear, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, that is, if it's not clear, if it's full of darkness, your whole body will be full of darkness too. There's so much here, and there's not time to go through it all. Maybe that's why the church is full of so much darkness these days. So many sin statistics are the same for the church as the world. Why? Well, just look at what we're watching. Most people in the church have seen worse things in private than they pretend to be shocked at in public. The statistics bear this out. The overwhelming majority of Christians in the U.S. have the same media viewing habits as the non-Christian population and the same sinful behaviors. Why is that? Monkey see, monkey do. Let your eyes look directly ahead. So, in the art of self-defense against what's out there, to make sure we stand our ground and don't go sliding away. Under it all, first you watch your heart, as two, you watch your mouth, and three, your eyes, and then four, finally, verse 26, watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Turn your feet from evil. These are pretty basic instructions. You want to keep from sliding away. Oh, be careful, little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful, little what? Feet, where you go. That's what he's saying. Turning neither to the right nor to the left. Turning your feet from evil. It's like Deuteronomy 5:32. So you shall observe and do just as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right or to the left. Maybe for most of us here, the dangers are not as much the heinous sins like adultery or murder or whatever, but it's so easy to drift to the right or to the left in smaller ways, slip sliding away in small ways that could end up being just as bad. It's what happens even to good people who don't watch their heart and their lips and their eyes. Their feet end up straying. They're lulled asleep by this anesthetic fog of a darkening culture that we're living in. One that's addicted to things that are permissible but not profitable. Things like entertainment or recreation or sports or food or nice homes or cabins and so many pleasant little diversions that become too important. Not that they're bad in and of themselves, but altogether they can lead you from God. It's so easy to drift to the left or to the right by... You might say, by nothing. Drifting ever so slowly from God. It's like C.S. Lewis said, nothing is very strong. I can't remember if I've used this before, but it's worth repeating if I have. Nothing is very strong. Strong enough to steal away a man's best years. Not in sweet sins, but in dreary flickering of the mind over it knows not what and knows not why, in the gratification of curiosities so feeble that the man is only half aware of them, or in the long, dim labyrinth of reveries that have not even lust or ambition to give them relish. It does not matter how strong the sins are, so long as their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light into nothing. Murder is no better than cards if cards will do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without signposts. Slip sliding away. Like Paul said, therefore let us be not asleep like others are, 1 Thess 5:6, but let us be on the alert. Take heed and keep on the alert, as Christ said in Mark 13:33, these days more than ever, with the seduction of the one-eyed cyclops that we call the internet and all the rest, keep on the alert. Don't be seduced away into the la-la land of cyberspace where you just drift around, surf around into who knows what. For you do not know when the appointed time will come. It is like a man on a way on a journey upon leaving his house and putting his slaves in charge, assigning to each one his task. Also commanded the doorkeeper to stay on the alert. Therefore you be on the alert. For you do not know when the master of the house is coming. In case he should come suddenly and find you asleep. What I say to you, I say to all, be on the alert. And you do that by watching your heart, your mouth, your eyes, and your feet. But of course, it's not all up to us. This is not works righteousness or anything on that level. Just basic life skills, basic skills of following God that any parent would teach his children. But still, even on that level, we're helpless alone. And thank goodness it's not all up to us. We need to do our part. And as we do that, we need to pray that God would help, would do his part.